Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The Quran instructs, stand up firmly for justice.
Firmly for justice, preaches the Quran. Is that why so many who practice that faith are burning churches and killing Christians, Mr. President, in Syria and Egypt and in Africa? Or are they somehow an anomaly of this wonderful faith? You see, at this national prayer breakfast today, our Christian president could have taken the opportunity to tell the world that he's not going to stand for the burning of churches and the killing of Christians. He could have said the slaughter of Christians will stop, and we're sending in special forces to Syria, to Egypt and Africa, and we're going to kill anyone who touches another church. That's what you'd expect from an American Christian president. But a long time ago, we all learned not to expect anything from this president, but more malarkey. The real story that caught my eye today is this one. This is the most frightening story to date. Do you know what he did last night while you slept, while you ate? He unilaterally changed the law to allow immigrants with limited terror contact into the United States. He doesn't have the authority to do so, but he did so. I found this in the Daily Caller today. The Obama administration issued new exemptions to a law that bars certain asylum seekers and refugees who provided, quote, limited material support to terrorists who are now believed to pose no threat to the United States. The so-called Department of Homeland Security under that stooge and the State Department under Lurch, that stooge, on their own, without Congress, published these new exemptions last night into the Federal Register to narrow the ban in the Immigration and Nationality Act, which excluded refugees and asylum seekers who had provided limited material support to terrorists. Now the DHS and John Lurch, Kerry, said, we're going to make sure that we can bring in as many Muslims from Syria and elsewhere as we wish. We want to get them into this country as fast as possible. Of course, I'm paraphrasing what I think they really mean by this. To make certain that the white heterosexual Christian male is no longer a majority in America, we have to reform, we have to transform America into our own image. So this is what they did. I can ask you what you feel about it, but if you don't feel outraged about it, frankly, you're brain dead. They are not allowed to do this. They cannot do this, but they did it. So we're living in very, very troubling times. We are living in the times that the Bible warned us about. And it's a shame that Bill O'Reilly, who had the president in front of him, didn't challenge him on the bigger issues. I think Bill did a fairly good job for a guy who's playing it down the middle. I think he did as good a job as anyone could do. I mean, let's be fair. We can all play, you know, quarterback after the Super Bowl. That was the Super Bowl of interviews, and O'Reilly did a good job. But frankly, he should have challenged him on this favoritism that he has for, let us say, a certain religion that isn't Christianity. He should have challenged them on why he's bending over backwards for immigration when 97% of Americans either don't care about it or don't think it's that important. What is the push for? This is frightening. I want to talk about this topic, and I want to go from the National Prayer Breakfast, and I want to play Obama's speech today about religion, and I want to talk about what you believe for a few moments before we go into the immigration story again. And that would be the, of course, you can call me right now on the immigration story, as some have done, at 855-400-7282, 855-400-7282. And we're going to take a gentleman from Washington, D.C. on MAL in a moment. But I want to set up what I'm going to do on the God thing. There was a debate between the science guy and an atheist as to whether we were all created by creationism or by evolution. It's an ongoing debate in America and in the world. It'll go on for till the end of time. It's Bill Nye versus Ken Ham on evolution and creationism. And we're going to talk about that on the program today. Because many people listen to me and they say, Savage, how can you, so educated as you are, believe in God? How can you believe in the fantasy of a God? and have so many higher degrees, especially in the sciences? And I've answered the question before, and I'm going to reassert my answer again today, where I don't think there's a conflict between a belief in God and a belief in science or even evolution. In fact, I don't believe that man was put here from a spaceship, nor do I believe the elephant was put here, a Noah's Ark, along with the other animals. I think that they're not, let's say, in conflict with each other, and I'm going to explain it to you a little later on, but I'd like to know what you think about that. So we've got two topics. God, man, and nature would be one, and then the immigration issue, which is not going to go away. The good news is that Boehner today said there'll be no immigration deal until Obama enforces the laws. This is actually a sea change from the Republican Party. I think they've heard us, and I think that Boehner has finally stood up for himself and for the party. And if he sticks to his guns, he's going to save the Republican Party from a total and absolute meltdown. And I want to congratulate House Speaker John Boehner for standing up to this push by the illegitimate to legalize tens of millions of people who are here illegally. Let's take a couple of quick calls. First one, Mr. Radu on WMAL in Washington, D.C. Radu, go ahead, please. You're on the program.
I am an immigrant to this country. It's very important to me to say that I'm a legal immigrant to this country. I came here about 35 years ago from Eastern Europe, and I think there's a major difference between the immigrant of today and the immigrant of yesterday. I think back then, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago, people came here with the idea of assimilation. They came here with the idea of becoming an American citizen. It was a very proud day when me and my parents, my mother cried when we became an American citizen. Well, from day one, when we came here, my parents insisted that at home, at school, at work, with friends, we only speak English. I speak a couple of other languages fluently, but that's besides the point. Speak 10 of them if you want to, as long as you speak English fluently. The immigrant of today is very...
But Radu, I have discussed this in great detail. I share a similar story with my own immigrant family. I'm an immigrant son, and I agree with you 1,000%, but I've said the same thing over and over again. You cannot absorb 30 to 50 million illegal aliens who will not learn English, do not respect our history, don't even know what our history is. They don't want to know our history. They wave the Mexican flag at sporting events. They speak Spanish in the household. They could care less about this culture. Why should they be rewarded with citizenship is what common sense would dictate. Isn't it, Radu?
I totally agree with you. And the thing is that when we came to this country, when my parents applied to leave Romania, we had to wait about 3 to 4 years to get our visa, and then we waited another 3 to 4 years. We got put on a waiting list because there was a quota on how many people can leave and emigrate from Romania into
right, and now Obama has a quota on white Europeans. They cannot come in. They're at the back of the bus. Do you know that? Do you know who's at the front of the bus? Do you know what this administration is doing to the demographics of America right in front of our eyes? Do you know why he's doing it? Do you know what his intent is? Do you know what the transformation is that he has in his mind, Radu?
Well, I think that, unfortunately...
It's Radu, I'm sorry, but I will tell you this. This topic has been discussed by me for 20 years. It doesn't mean that your heartfelt emotions on the issue are any less important. But I will tell you that I have finally understood what he means by transformation. I wrote about it in Trickle-Down Tyranny. I wrote about it in Trickle-Up Poverty. I wrote about it in Liberalism as a Mental Disorder. Which, you know, how many different ways do I have to say the same thing for how many years until you understand that it seems to me that we're fighting for our lives itself? Because I pity the children who are young in this country because they're not going to live in an America like the America that we even have today. They're going to live in some third world cesspool if this keeps up. I'm sorry if those words offend you. But if you keep catering to the lowest common denominator from third world countries, and you don't require anything of them to grant them the benefits of this great nation, the nation then goes in their direction, not in this direction. It's a straight out statement. You can call it anything you want, but call it practical. Because the fact of the matter is, people flee Mexico, Guatemala, and El Salvador to better themselves, not to worsen themselves. In other words, if they could have the same lives in Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, they'd stay there, right? But they don't stay there. They love America. Unfortunately, we don't require anything for admission. It's like letting them into the Super Bowl without giving them charging them a ticket. Well, my grandfather paid for his ticket. He knew he wouldn't become very successful in this country in the few years that he lived here, till he died at 49 of a heart attack from working too hard. But he hoped maybe his son would do better. And his son, my father, did a little bit better until he died from overwork at a very early age. So then I was man-child in the promised land. And I ran with a gun to my head my whole life. I am very much like the mythical or stereotypical Asian, by the way, in terms of my character. I have to tell it to you straight up. I used to read about Chinese students who would come here, and if they didn't get straight A's at Harvard, many of them, you read about it? I was shocked. They would kill themselves because they disappointed their family and their ancestors. So most Americans would say, that's crazy. You know, they shouldn't do that. Well, let me tell you something. That's not too far from my upbringing. They didn't say, kill yourself if you didn't make it in America or you didn't do well. What they said was, you'd be a giant failure if you didn't. All I heard from the time I was a child was, you have all the opportunities I didn't have, and we expect you to do very well. And don't blame anybody if you don't. It'll only be your own laziness or stupidity. Those were the words that I was inculcated with, which is why I've been driven so far in life. It doesn't come out of the air. It didn't come from nothing. I see the disaster of liberalism. I see what catering to the weak and the poor and the lazy do to a society. I didn't say hurt the weak and the poor and the lazy, but I said don't twist the whole society upside down so that the weak, the poor, and the lazy are suddenly the role models. So I think I've covered that topic. I'd much rather talk about God and evolution. That's what I really like to talk about. And I need to get some God calls because I have to show you that many of you doubting Thomases can come away from this program just maybe understanding that there is a God in heaven and you can still be a rationalist. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation is presented by Swiss America at 800-BUY-COIN, the only gold company Michael Savage trusts.
Here's a key.
In my life, he directed my path to Chicago and my work with churches who were intent on breaking the cycle of poverty and hard-hit communities there. I'm grateful not only because I was broke and the church fed
him. Oh, what nonsense. He was broke and the church fed him. He came from a family in Hawaii where his grandmother supported him because his mother ran off. What do you mean he was broke? He was never broke. He was a spoiled rich kid. He went to Columbia. He went to Pepperdine, then Columbia Law. What did they do? How did they get away with this garbage? He was broke, you hear? Suddenly he was homeless in the streets of Chicago, saved by Reverend Wright. He was given the bread of Jesus, and that saved him. You got to listen to the rest of this malarkey. This man lies about everything he says, and he gets away with it because no one will say a word. No president in modern history has ever been able to get away with as many lies as this guy. I can't believe this. I was broke and the church fed me? Read his own autobiography. He was blowing dope at Columbia with his buddy. What do you mean he's broke? This is unbelievable. Led me to Michelle? It led me to public service? This is sickening. Let's go to the callers before I lose my temper and say something I regret, because I don't want to say anything I regret. I really don't want to say anything I regret. BAP and in Texas, WBAP, so powerful. I think they even hear it in Mexico. Dave, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, it was, you were mentioning earlier regarding the illegal immigration thing and how they're going to really push this amnesty thing. And I agree with you. The thing is, they're overwhelming the system, and some of these people have ties to terrorism. And honestly, you said something a few years back on your show that really kind of stuck with me. That, a planned event, and I'm paraphrasing what you said, of course, but a planned event, that it's not outside the realm of possibility that they're either going to let something happen or...
Well, everyone fears that. Everyone fears a Reichstag fire, that this man is capable of anything. Everyone fears it. Thanks for the call. We can't go into it because it didn't happen yet. You say it can't happen here? Some say it already happened here. Oh, yeah. Remember Timothy McVeigh? Remember all the unanswered questions? Did you ask why they executed Timothy McVeigh so quickly after he was found guilty of blowing up the FBI Murrah building? I mean, there are murderers on death row, 30 years. Mass murderers, 30 years. Mass rapists, 30 years. But Timothy McVeigh seems to have been executed within a year or so after being found guilty. You ever ask yourself why? Did he act alone? Don't go into it. I'm not going to talk about it. So don't tell me it can't happen here. Don't tell me it can't happen here. Okay, I believe it already has happened here. Don't think this country is so unique in that regard. When you have power-mad dictators in power, and I don't care whether they're constrained by a constitution, when you have rogue leadership that is not constrained by morality or ethics, not constrained by a Congress, they're capable of doing anything and they will do anything. Say, oh, come on, you're getting carried away. They wouldn't do the things that evil dictators do. No, they burned Serbia to the ground. They blew up every bridge on the Danube River. Bill Clinton did. You don't remember that? And why did he do it? Just to steal Kosovo from the Serbs. You forgot that. It was swept under the rug because the liberal lie was that the Serbs were the Nazis and the Bosnian Muslims were the Jews. They changed the entire course of human the narrative. You didn't know about the atrocities against Serbs, did you? You didn't know that the Serbs were our greatest ally in World War II, did you? Clinton turned the world upside down. So what do you think Obama's doing? Turning it right side up?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Don't be a prisoner of your own ignorance. Please don't be a prisoner of your own bias. Please don't be a prisoner of your own doxies. Please open your mind to discussion. The person who considers himself a good person would say, you know what, I'd rather believe in Obama than believe in the Tea Party because he's such a good man. After all, he's a man of color. Therefore, he has a certain special, let us say, dispensation towards the truth and humanity than those evil members of the Tea Party. You see, that's a bias. That's a prejudice. You can't tell a book by its cover. You can't tell who a person is simply by how they look. Haven't you learned that in the first grade? So why do you always give the president the pass other than your own reverse racial bias and fears that you'll be considered somehow a racist if you doubt a word that the man says? To me, he's a serial liar. Now, all politicians tend toward, let us say, that inclination. That's why they're in politics to begin with. It's not known to be the truth. It is the world's oldest profession. I think it came before prostitution. In other words, someone had to run that profession in the old days, and it must have been the early politicians who originally did that. So, you know, don't expect him to be in a separate category, but this man just tells one whopper after another. But it's not about him today. It's about so many bigger things than him. And I don't want you to forget the story I told you about, which was that he changed the law overnight, allowing immigrants with limited terror contacts into the United States. He doesn't have the power to do so, but he did it overnight. He did it with John Lurch Kerry. They signed this. They signed this. And what they did was, is they're now saying these changes will allow us to let people in who have limited terror contacts into the United States. And they try to redefine what that means. Why would they bend over backwards for people who even have, let's say, a scintilla of working with terrorists around them? Why would they let them into the country? Why wouldn't they err on the side of we the people and our national security, unless they were out to destroy our national security and our belief in the government? Why would they do this? Why would Leaky Leahy, Lurch Kerry, and Barack Obama do this to us last night without Congress? Now, this is an impeachable offense, by the way. But we're not going to talk about it because we can only get so much out of the government. Look at Boehner, how long it took him to move him against amnesty. And that's why all of you who've been running ads against Boehner, congratulations, you did your job. But I think you ought to stop the campaign right now. Just, you keep the fire under Boehner, but stop it. You're only going to destroy our only chance to retake the Senate if you keep this litany up against all Republicans. Yes, many of them are rhinos. I wrote the book on it. So please don't tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. But you've done your job about fire the speaker. We get it. We get it. So he just came out finally and did the right thing. So give the guy credit where credit is due. No one has been more, let us say, critical of Boehner than I have, calling him cling, playing the ice cubes. But he did the right thing. He said no amnesty, period. He dropped it. Maybe he knew that they wanted him out. Now let's go on to the God discussion. I want to talk about God. Whether you believe in evolution or creationism or both. How could, actually, that's not the question, because then we'll get everyone calling on their particular bias. Can you believe in God and evolution? Can you believe in God at all if you're a rationalist, if you're a scientist? Now, many times I've quoted, I've had this discussion 5-6 times in my career on radio, the God discussion. And by the way, we have an archival, the guys found it, I asked for it and they gave it to me. Many years ago, I had an Orthodox rabbi named Jeff who called the show, who explained it, by the way. He actually let us believe in God and science at the same time. And I, for years, could never find this man again. I still think he was an angel who called the show. I don't believe he's actually a real man. I actually think God called the show. he disguised himself as a caller, because you're not going to believe this call when I play it. It's going to let all of you go back to church and synagogue and say, wow, I can do it again. But what did Einstein think about God? The interesting thing is, which Einstein is the question? Because many times I've said to doubters on the show who didn't believe in God, I said, well, what do you think Einstein believed in, one of the world's greatest minds? Well, he believed in different things, by the way. And one of the things he said was that he didn't really believe in a God of the type we believe in, but he also said that the longer he looked at nature and the structure called nature, he believes there has to be a greater power, a greater creator. So, you know, it depends on which Einstein you're talking about and at which phase of his life. In his middle and later life, he had a different view than he had when he was a young atheist. As he got older, although he thought God was intangible and impersonal, he still thought that there was a God in heaven who created it all, according to what I've read of Einstein. So again, when you ask someone what a man thinks, a very famous man, a very famous philosopher and a physicist, it's which, you know, which phase of his life and what did he say when, because very few people have the same belief structure in anything for their entire life, except diehard left-wing fanatic liberals like Obama. These people are dyed in the wool, cast in stone, left-wing fanatics, and nothing will ever change them. They're all the same. I've never seen people incapable of evolution. Like the liberal of today. They're incapable of growing up. As an old phrase, if you're not a liberal at 20, you have no heart. If you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind. I was once a young social worker and a teacher who was very liberal. It's how I was. Oh, I was for the downtrodden. I was for the poor. I thought society was oppressive. Until society stepped on my rights. Until the liberal social engineer said, white males need not apply. Until I saw bums leeching off welfare while they earned more money than I did. I was the welfare worker with a college degree. They were making more money than I was by working the system. So, you know, eventually you change, you grow up, you evolve. But Obama hasn't evolved in his thinking, has he? These left-wingers never change. They stick to the program very much like the Communist Party USA sticks to its doxy. They never change. Nothing can alter them. It's the world according to Karl Marx or Vladimir Lenin. Nothing changes for them. And so I think we're in trouble when we have a president who cannot and will not evolve. That's what I like to see, is evolution in the president's thinking. Let's go to the callers. Walter on WABC in New York. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, I would just like to say it takes more faith to believe in evolution than it does to believe in God. The most complex thing in the universe is the human brain, and to believe that that evolved by random chance, that takes a lot of faith. It's not in science, certainly.
All right, look, that's a complete statement, and it's a faith-based statement, and I respect it. If anyone else wants to tune in to this topic of faith versus rationality, evolution, I'd love to hear it. We got a caller out of Hawaii named Mark. Mark, thanks for calling from Aloha Land. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I've been a long-time listener, and I've read many of your books and studied them rigorously. And I'd like to share with you a unification of faith and rationalism.
Please, I'm anxious to hear it. I really am.
Okay, so this is the logic that I came up with behind why faith is rational. Rational, by definition, is having reason. And whenever somebody tells you they have faith, well, that is a reason. Therefore, faith is rational. It's a reason behind why people believe in certain things that they believe. Therefore, it's a rational belief.
All right, well, that's interesting. You're using Aristotelian logic to entrap your atheist friends. I bet they don't buy it, though.
Yes, but the thing is, I have a science degree, too, so I've had a lot of discussions with them. And I'd like to also explain how evolution can be tied into God, too, if you don't mind me taking a...
No, I'd love to hear it. Go. You've got the floor.
So in the laboratory, what I did was I was an assistant in the laboratory at the University of Hawaii, Manoa, and I genetically altered DNA of plants, various plants, native Hawaiian plants and stuff. And what I'd like to say about that is when I was working in the lab and I was altering the DNA, I thought to myself, well, why couldn't God do this himself? And why couldn't God program DNA to let this trait called evolution arise? And then it made sense to me. It all made sense. God can...
So God was the original genetic engineer. He just set it up on his own time scale.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And God programmed evolution into the genetic code so that way things can evolve over time. But God did put that in there.
That's beautiful. So, you're another caller like this caller, Jeff, who I'm going to play shortly, the Orthodox rabbi from many years ago who said the same thing in a Jewish way. Where do you derive your faith, Mark? I assume you're a Christian?
I would say that I'm a Messianic Jew. I'm a Middle Eastern Christian, yes.
A Middle Eastern Christian?
Yes. What has happened is as Christianity came to the West, it lost many of its Jewish roots. So I'm trying to bring back the original Christianity.
What religion were you raised in, Mark?
I was raised in various westernized Christian denominations, and I've had to search for true Christianity for myself.
But did you grow up in Hawaii?
Yes, I'm a local.
You're a local guy. You're at University of Hawaii at Manoa, beautiful, great campus. I did botany there. Some of my collections are still there. I have some of the greatest memories of my life from that university. I did wonderful work there. It's a beautiful place and a great place to meditate on creation. When you look at the islands and the plant and the flora and the fauna, you can't help but see God's work. I mean, you just look at the Kolekole Pass. You look at the mountains when you drive over the pass over into Kailua, and you look at the creation of the earth, and you have to sit in wonderment, don't you? It just makes you feel what you really are, which is very small on this planet. The rawness of the young islands is what I'm saying. Looking at the mountain formations, it's so new, isn't it?
Yes, it's beautiful. And I'm thankful to God that he put me here in Hawaii, one of the only paradises on earth.
So what are you studying, actually? What is your field?
Okay, well, I was doing like you. I did plant science, well, botany and biotechnology. That's where I got my scientific education. And then what happened was I had this intellectual discussion with a friend. She shared with me a philosopher named Robert Persig. So I actually left science because my scientific foundation was shaken by philosophy. And then as I studied philosophy, my philosophical foundation was shaken by theology, and not just any theology, Judeo-Christian theology. And that's why where I'm at today is in theology.
So you're a man on a quest. You're a real searcher of truth. I love that. There are very few of you left. Do you run into people like yourself at all these days, Mark?
Well, I listen to you. You're one of the only other people that think in a similar fashion as I do. I agree with you 99.999%.
But you see, I'm from another time, though, Mark. I don't think my thinking is very well respected anymore. I'm a what's known as a quester, a dreamer, a seeker, a doubter. You can call me anything you want, but the thing is I'm always looking for some answers. And it was a real challenge to my parents, who were very simple people in a way. I would ask questions about the universe, and my mother would say basically, Michael, calm down, stop asking so many questions. Did you have a similar situation as a child?
Yes, my teachers, you shared it in one of your shows, the psychiatrists and psychologists are coming up with this new type of diagnosis where they're diagnosing kids that are outspoken. And what happened in elementary school, in all of my report cards, the teachers tried to shut me up by writing, Mark makes unnecessary comments. But here's the catch.
So did Isaiah. So did Ezekiel. So did Moses and Abraham. they all made inappropriate comments, didn't they?
Yeah, and the thing was, it might have been inappropriate to them, but it was definitely not inappropriate to me because I was challenging the system since early childhood.
Yeah, but how did your parents deal with a precocious child?
Well, my father and mother, they did a great job instilling morals and ethics into me, Judeo-Christian morals and ethics. And as far as education went, I would have to educate myself and do various things and learn from all the great minds, including yourself. What I am able to do is I pick certain great minds and I learn as much as I can. In fact, I wanted to share that you taught me how to create words. I read your books, and you come up with words all the time, like sheeple and various other words, and I was able to create words, and now some of my words are published on UrbanDictionary.com because I've learned the process that you taught me.
Well, wait a minute. I never sat here and taught a process for coming up with new words. What's the process? I'd like to know my own secret.
Okay, so the word that I came up to describe the process, which you've taught me by listening to your show, is called Word-O-Matics. And Word-O-Matics is a mixture of words plus mathematics equals Word-O-Matics. And how?
Oh, well, Mark, this is such a good call that I have to ask you to please hold on so you can teach me what you allege I taught you. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Dear Mr. Einstein, do you pray, wrote a girl in January 1936. Imagine in those days a child would ask that. Dear Mr. Einstein, do scientists pray, asks a sixth grader. And he answered her in 1936. I'll have that answer for you the next hour. But I want to go back to a caller who came out of nowhere, Mark from Hawaii. Mark, welcome back. We have such little time. We could spend a half an hour on this at least. You say you're a young science practitioner of science, genetic engineering, and you came to the conclusion that if you can alter genes, then God must have set up the alteration of genes on his own time frame. Is that a fair analysis of what you said?
Exactly. And not only did God do that, he programmed within our genetic code an evolutionary trait which would allow us to evolve over time.
So you, as a young scientist, can still have faith in God?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, what is this technique you say that you think you derive from listening to my show all these years about creating words? Because I love to create words. What do you call it? Word-onomics?
Word-o-matics. Like mathematics, but put word in front of that. So word-o-matics.
How does a person listening to this show practice word-o-matics?
Okay, what you do, like Lewis Carroll, I've studied Lewis Carroll, and what Lewis Carroll would do was he'd splice words. So he'd take one word, cut it in half, he'd take the second word, cut it in half, and put the two together, and I think the French word is called portmanteau for that word.
Oh, boy. You broke the code, Mark. You broke the savage code. You figured out that I'm actually doing word engineering. Well, Mark, for this wonderful work, I'm sending you a free $50 gift to Shari's Berries, berries.com, Savage. I wish I could send you a free gold coin, but it's too much money. I'm going to send you a copy of my book, and we're going to stay in touch by email. Great call, Mark. When I come back, more talk about, I don't know, God, man, immigration, the universe, and the liberals' inability to evolve.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
In my life, he directed my path to Chicago and my work with churches who were intent on breaking the cycle of poverty and hard-hit communities there. And I'm grateful not only because I was broke in the church fed me.
Oh my God.
Because it led to everything else. It led me to embrace Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. It led me to Michelle, the love of my life, and it blessed us with two extraordinary daughters. It led me to public service, And the longer I serve, especially in moments of trial or doubt, the more thankful I am of God's guiding hand.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Who can believe this? He was broke and the church fed him? He recreated a whole story about himself. Next we'll hear he was homeless and he saw Jesus in a raindrop. I don't believe, how did he get away with this at a prayer breakfast? He was broke and the church fed him? The guy went to Columbia University on a scholarship. Well, anyway, it's not about him anymore. It is the national prayer breakfast and what we wanted to hear and didn't hear. Why didn't Mr. Obama defend the slaughter of, defend Christians? Christians, as you know, are being slaughtered. Churches are being burned in Syria, in Egypt, in Africa, by Muslims. Why doesn't he say that this is not going to be accepted? The American military will back up the churches around the world, and Christians need not fear anymore because we're coming to your rescue. Wouldn't that been an appropriate thing to say to National Prayer Breakfast if he is suddenly embracing Jesus? And notice how affirmatively Christian he was today compared with previous Christian breakfasts. As we get closer to the midterm elections, he seems to be finding his religious footing closer and closer to the midterm elections. He's becoming more and more certain of his Christianity. We no longer hear about the Quran as often as we did in the beginning. Didn't quite work out from the way he hoped it would. Anyway, I want to talk about a few topics. So let me make a few quotes about scientists and God, and how can you believe in science and God. Here's a man you never heard of. I never heard of him. William H. Bragg, 1862 to 1942. Nobel Prize in 1915 for physics, chemistry. He was a mathematician. All-around genius. This was before affirmative action, 1862 to 1942. They didn't give out Nobel Prizes for ethnic studies. And here's what he said. He said, from religion comes a man's purpose, from science his power to achieve it. Sometimes people ask if religion and science are not opposed to one another. He says they are, in the sense that the thumb and fingers of my hand are opposed to one another. It is an opposition by means of which anything can be grasped. Close quote. William H. Bragg, he wrote that in, 1915 or so. That's pretty amazing. Here's Wernher von Braun. Now, he's controversial in the sense that he was Hitler's rocket scientist, but he was so good that the CIA brought him to America to head up our rocket program, and he gave us our first rockets, by the way. Did you know that our entire rocket program was based on Nazi scientists? As hard as it may be feel hard to swallow, they gave us our rocket program. Wernher von Braun was deeply involved in our first trip to the moon. Without him, we wouldn't have been there. So here's what he said. He didn't live that long, 1912 to 1977. 65. I always do the addition. Do you ever do that when you see like birth and death? You add up quick and then you say how old you are. Everyone, I used to do that when I was young. So you do the quick math. Oh, I wonder. Here's what he said. He said, I find it is difficult to understand a scientist who does not acknowledge the presence of a superior rationality behind the existence of the universe as it is to comprehend the theologian who would deny the advances of science. There you go. Anyway, you get the picture. We're going to talk about God. Man, God, and nature. And the news as it comes up. Speaking of man, God, and nature, rabbis in Israel sent a wrath of God letter to John Lurch Carey. Lurch got a letter from the rabbis of Israel that should make anyone shake. According to IsraelNationalNews.com, a group called Rabbis for the Committee to Save the Land and People of Israel penned an open letter to Secretary of State John Kerry calling for an end to his antagonism against Israel. INN reports that the criticisms in the letter stem from Kerry's efforts to hand over Israel to Palestinian Authority Chairman Mahmoud Abbas, as well as Kerry's threatened global boycott of the Jewish state if peace talks fail. The letter contends that Kerry's plans would result in tens of thousands of Jews being displaced from their homes, something the rabbis equate to a war on God. And here are excerpts from the rabbi's letter as reported by INN. It will not make it to the CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC networks. Are you ready? Rabbis to John Kerry. Your incessant efforts to expropriate integral parts of our Holy Land and hand them over to Abbas's terrorist gang amount to a declaration of war against the creator and ruler of the universe. For God awarded the entire land of Israel to our ancestors Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in order that they bequeath it as an everlasting inheritance to their descendants, the Jewish people, until the end of all time. If you continue on this destructive path, you will ensure your everlasting disgrace in Jewish history for bringing calamity upon the Jewish people, like Titus, who destroyed the first and second great temples in the entire holy city of Jerusalem, and who by heavenly punishment brought eventual disaster upon themselves too. By the power of our holy Torah, we admonish you to cease immediately all efforts to achieve these disastrous agreements in order to avoid severe heavenly punishment for everyone involved. I like this faith-based admonition to a John Lurch Carey. Rabbi, send wrath of God letter to John Carey. It will not affect him. Believe me, it will not affect him whatsoever. It will not affect him whatsoever. So now let's go back to this whole issue of God, faith, the universe. I promised you something in the last hour. Many of you have been holding for over an hour to hear it. I'm not going to play it now, though, because I don't have the 5 minutes I'm going to need. It's too good to cut it off. I did the same topic years ago where I asked, how can you believe in God and evolution at the same time? I had a caller named Jeff from New York who identified as an Orthodox rabbi. I still think he doesn't exist because we actually tried to find him and he was never available. We didn't know who he was. So maybe it was an angel. Well, I tell you what, let's play a minute of it. Play Jeff and then I'll take some calls. Go and play clip 17. So we're having this seminar now on the Savage Nation, Jeff. Bible says God created the heaven and the earth, and he did so in 7 days. It does not say he experimented and created first the Neanderthal, etc. So now how do you answer those doubts and fears in a person?
The Bible indicates that God is proactive and responsive. Now, it is our belief paradigm that God is omnipotent, God is all-powerful, God is omniscient, God knows everything, and that God is perfect. Well, if God is perfect, how can God make a mistake? And the answer is God does not make mistakes. The mistake is our misunderstanding and misinterpretation of that which God does. And absent a cumulative knowledge of the ancients, of the language, of the culture, the philosophy, and the theosophy, as well as the theology, far be it from any of us to assume that we have even the slightest inkling of what it is that God is doing.
And now, wait, before you go on, I once had a scientist and a religious Jew call a show. He's a scientist and he was a religious Jew. And I said to him, how do you concord the idea that fossil evidence goes back millions of years when the creationists believe that the earth was created 5,000 or 6,000 years ago? And he said, and that is easily explained because the concept of time is different than most people understand it to be. Meaning that there's no discord between those two statements. Do you accept the fossil record?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, carbon dating is carbon dating.
Okay, but I've heard people call and say there's no such thing as carbon dating. It's false science. Those are the ignoramuses who don't even know what carbon dating is. They're being taught this by these ignorant preachers in these churches who are as dangerous and as ignorant as the imams teaching the children the Wahhabi theory of Islam to go out and kill the infidel. These people are, in essence, circumcising their own brains. How do you answer them? Tell them what carbon dating is and why it's not against God.
All right. The essence of examining the physical circumstances, every organic compound, by definition, has carbon. If it has carbon, it is an organic compound. And we can, with a reasonable degree of accuracy, determine the dating, the origin, and the timestamp by virtue of the analysis of the substance at hand. The fact of the matter is that God speaks in language that can be understood by humankind. And so when God speaks of it was evening and it was morning of, and again, one has to understand it between a cardinal number, and so God says of day one, of a unit of time. That unit could be a billion years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was evening or morning of the second of these units of time. And so in what we are told are 6 days, they can very easily be 6 epochs of history. And I ask you a question, Dr. Savage. If God is omnipotent, why didn't God just push a button and create everything in its final state all at once? Did God create television?
That's an interesting... In other words, why did he experiment? If he knew everything and he could do everything, why did he have to go through these multiple stages? Now you've got me stumped, Professor. Why?
That's right. Why did he go through multiple stages, and why is there an absolute order to the creation process? If you look,
and give me the answer, because I'm hanging on the edge of my seat.
Because God wanted to teach us and make sure we understood that the creation of one single human being took an enormity of preparation, and that everything that exists in this world is a function of the divine preparation. Nothing happens in an instant.
Hold on. Now you've got me thinking. So this laborious process of creating life, particularly human life, is to teach us the divinity of every human life, the sacred nature of every human life. Isn't that also true?
That is absolutely true.
That goes to the core of Jewish teaching, which is the sacredness of human life. Therefore, choose life. He who saves a single life, it is as though he has saved the entire world. That's a later teaching, of course, but it's an interpretive teaching from the Bible. That is a beautiful teaching for the whole world to know. That is part of the light, that is part of the lamp of Judaism. But these beautiful, transcendental, humanistic teachings are essential to our survival as human beings.
Savage.
That was probably 5 or more years ago from a caller named Jeff. I wish to God he was listening to the show right now and could call us at 855-407-282 and confirm that he's actually a person, so that I don't walk around under the belabored thought in the middle of the night, especially at 3 a.m. when I awaken sometimes wondering about things, if it wasn't an angel who called the show. Because the most important thing I remember from that is he said, yes, of course carbon dating is carbon dating. But he said a unit of time could be a billion years to God. It doesn't have to be a day. So when you say God created the world in 7 days, it could be 7 epochs, 7 million years. It doesn't have to be in 1 day, 7 days. And that permits you to go to church and thank God you're alive. But no one has to tell me that there's a... You know, I don't have to break my brain to understand the divinity of life. I see it in a fly that I let out of a house. I let it fly out of my door. Sometimes you see a fly, if you've ever looked at a fly under a microscope, which I did as a kid, you see the amazing complexity of a fly. You say, why should I kill it? Did it bother me? So I let a fly out of the window, Teddy. Or a butterfly. Do you want to crush everything that walks? Must you step on every ant that's under your feet? Must you be like Nancy Pelosi and the Cyclopses in Washington, who see us as nothing more than ants that they can step on? As they suck on candy and blow hot air out into the microphone, on and on with their litany, which is all lies about corruption and greed and power, nothing about the truth, not one word. Every word out of their mouth while sucking on a hard candy, thinking that no one could see through this. I ask myself, don't they see the world as it is? They think that they themselves are God, I guess. I guess that's what power does to people. That's why I thank God I have no power. That's why I thank God that I'm basically an outcast. That's why I thank God that I've never been chosen for anything more than for what I've been chosen. Personally, I'm making it very personal. I'll give you another little tiny story in 1 minute because I got to go to a break. We're getting off onto a tangent, which I love because it makes me feel better, and it must make you feel better to listen, because anyone could talk about the other subjects. I do this. This is what I do. Yesterday after the show, I have a little orchard somewhere near the San Francisco area. I drove to this teeny orchard. It's less than an acre. There's only a few trees on it that produce. And one of them, even though it's the winter, produced mandarin oranges, beautiful little red oranges. So in years past, the oranges were too bitter. They were not edible, really. Well, this year, I saw them. They were in bloom. They were in fruit, rather. So I was up there with a nice person who happens to be from El Salvador and my dog. And I started to pick these little mandarins, and I was giving them to her and putting them in my pocket. And all of a sudden, there was little Teddy. And he appeared out of nowhere. And take a guess. You want to hear about cute? This little 10-pound dog saw us gathering the oranges and putting them in our pocket. As we left, she started to laugh. And she said, look, Teddy. Teddy picked up one of the little oranges in his mouth and carried it back into the house so proudly. He wanted to help. Tell me what that means to you. Doesn't that give you belief and faith and beauty? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation is presented by Swiss America at 800-BUY-COIN, the only gold company Michael Savage trusts.
It is Savage Nation. Listen, I'm not asking you to believe in God. I'm not asking you to believe in religion. There's room for everyone, including the doubters and the atheists, the agnostics. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just having a conversation with you about how you can believe in God and evolution at the same time and playing some amazing tape and getting some amazing calls, which ultimately is the purpose of talk radio, which is to stimulate your mind and your thinking. Otherwise, what's the good of it? It's the same as anything else otherwise. If we're not going to do something different in talk radio, why listen? It's not just to be quirky and say funny, dirty words or, you know, get on the edge of things to sound cute. That's a guy in New York with a wig who I call the balloon man. It worked for him. That's like shooting heroin to listen to that kind of stuff. Listening to rap music is like shooting heroin. That's all. It damages your brain and your soul. At least that's one man's opinion. I'll be right back to talk about all the news of the day right here in the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation.
This is a really shocking thing that there's no federal intervention here.
Weekdays, noon till 3.
On Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
So personal and degrading. The attempt to marginalize him. You're not an American. You are not born here. The birth of us. You're not a Christian. You're not qualified. The attempts to undermine his authority as president, his moral authority, has been such an organized movement by the organized for some of the Tea Party element to ideologically oppose blacks and women and workers.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Jesse High Jackson wins the Looney Tunes Award of the Day. Anyone who dares question the Messiah is considered, a misogynist, a racist, a birther, anything else he could figure out in his inimitable genius. See, it's not that he's the most divisive, radical, leftist, out of the ken of the ordinary president in the history of the country. It's that we're all those things. It's not that everything he's doing is wrecking the country. No, it's because we're racist, according to Jesse I. Jackson. So that's the world we're living in. So that's why we're not talking about them, because there's much more to talk about than them. Them, the power structure. How much can you take of it? You know, I really want to talk about the God thing again a little bit more, because we have such great callers. But first, a few headlines. Vitamin C shows promise as cancer therapy. Wow, the establishment finally found that if you use vitamin C along with, they're acknowledging it. Intravenous vitamin C combined with conventional chemotherapy can kill cancer cells, says the University of Kansas Medical Center. No kidding. Linus Pauling wrote about that 40 years ago. But they're still tentatively suggesting it might be possible. But of course, they won't get rid of conventional chemotherapy, because that would be a blow to the pharmaceutical medical complex. Fine, use both. At least you understand that vitamin C does have anti-cancer action. So if you're on chemo, tell your doctor that you'd like intravenous vitamin C as well. And don't let them say there's nothing to it. It shows their ignorance, not their intelligence. In a study of 27 patients newly diagnosed with stage 3 or stage 4 ovarian cancer, researchers found that patients who received a high dose of IV vitamin C, along with conventional cancer therapy of paclitaxel, or carboplatin, experienced fewer toxic effects from the chemo drugs. Well, that's only half the story. It was not just fewer toxic effects. It probably also stimulated the immune system. Whatever. That's all. I don't want to talk about cancer at all. We've done, you know, what I'm going to do on it. Then it's the issue of the actor who OD'd. You know, I'm sick and tired of him being a victim. I'm tired of hearing that the junkie was a victim. It's sickening already. It's enough already. First of all, most people don't know who Philip Seymour Hoffman is. That's number one. It's an in story. I told you I liked his acting. but have no sympathy for a junkie who ODs. Here is the most selfish individual you can imagine is the heroin addict. Any addict, for that matter, is selfish. Think about what I'm going to say to you. I'm tired of crying for Philip Seymour Hoffman being found on the floor with a needle in his arm. He did it. I didn't do it. Nobody put the needle in his arm. It's an example of the most selfish kind of individual on the planet. He didn't think about his three children. He didn't think about his common-law wife. He's so selfish he wouldn't even marry her. I love the woman he lived with for these years and had children with. What a great guy. I love all. It's like equal to being a husband now. Shacking up with a woman for 30 years and not becoming a father. That's now equal to a father to the degenerates in the media. No, it's not the same thing. He didn't take a vow and stick it out through thick and through thin. He didn't take a vow and raise his children. Instead, he went out in the middle of the, on a Saturday night, took out money from an ATM, scored drugs, bought 60 packets, 70 packets, and then gave him a heroin orgy to himself. Who did it to him? In other words, he put his love of heroin above his children. He put his love of heroin above himself. I don't want to hear any more about the crying for the junkie who OD'd. I'm not sorry. He got what he was looking for. He took the great train to hell. That's where he wanted to go to begin with. What do you think using drugs is? You think it's a highway to heaven? It's a way of killing yourself in a small way every time you put a needle in your arm, every time you put a joint in your mouth. That's what it is. It's a highway to hell. You're killing yourself slowly. So I don't want to hear any more about the poor junkie, Philip Seymour Hoffman. And end of story. Over. If I'm being moralistic, too bad. That's all. That's how I would talk to myself. You know, they're making it sound like you should try it. Everywhere you turn, heroin, marijuana, this, every day another drug sale. Now let's take some calls, because I got it out of my system. You can see why I'm popular in San Francisco, because of my views. Here they don't even call them junkies. Injection drug users, you hear? A filthy junkie in the gutter who breaks into cars and mugs people for junk money is an injection drug user. They hold him up like in the San Francisco newspaper like he's something sacred. Instead of the Eagle Scout, it's the, okay, I can't say it's a family show. I had a rhyme there. But it was not clean enough for basic radio. WBAP, Vincent, you're up on the Savage Nation from the great state of Texas. What's on your mind from BAP land?
Well, I'm just thinking, if God is a righteous God, he wouldn't send people to hell for not believing if he didn't show himself to be there.
I don't argue with you. I mean, I've heard people who've said, how can a righteous God give a baby leukemia? How can a righteous God, if you go into a leukemia ward and you see little babies who've done nothing wrong, why are they there? I've heard this, Vincent.
Yeah, sin entered the world and through it death, you know.
Well, of course, people would argue that. Then they'd say, well, it's from a past life. They committed a sin and they're going to suffer now. I don't buy it. I see all of the little babies suffering with tubes in their bodies. Something in me doesn't believe that they did anything wrong in this life or the last life. I think it's just simply chance. That's what happened. It was genetics and chance. I don't believe. See, I have said this, Vincent. I want to say this to you and everyone else, and then maybe we'll move past the preachy religion part and get back to regular programming. But the thing is this. Many years ago, I went through a turmoil and doubt. And I sometimes go in and out of it. But the thing was, I found a book by a rabbi who wrote that if he believed God was omnipotent, he ceased believing immediately because it would mean he's a mean God, a punishing God. So he came to conclude that there is a God, but God is not omnipotent. God is omnipresent, but he can't control every action of every being for every second. So that gave me comfort. I don't know if it gives anyone else comfort, but God is not omnipotent. He doesn't control whether you go out and pick your nose or not. He didn't say, put your finger and pick your nose. I'm sorry to make it so down to earth. God didn't tell Philip Seymour Hoffman to put a needle in his arm. Okay? God did not strike a kid dead in a crosswalk. God did not take that Christian school bus coming back from an outing and have it fall off a road and have a bunch of kids killed who came back from a Christian camp. It happened. It's chance. Now, so you have to understand that. I mean, many of you don't want to believe it. I understand that. I get it. I used to watch fighting, boxing matches as a kid. My father liked fights. I used to watch them. And I used to wonder, just before the fight, the fighter would get on his knees and make the cross. In the other corner, I'd look over. There's the other fighter making a cross, praying to the same God. The one in one corner said, I hope that I can beat the heck out of the other guy and knock him out. And the other corner, the other one was saying, God, let me beat the other guy up and knock him out. So I said, wait a minute, how does God figure this out? I mean, they're both praying to the same God. How does that work? I never understood that. But the issue is, if it gives a man faith to fight, if it gives a man faith to go on, it's good. And as my mother said to me, when I doubted when I was young, she said, everyone has to believe in something. Because I used to ask her, she wasn't a very religious person at all. She's just a good person, which to me trumps religion. She was as good as gold. She said, I don't know, everyone has to believe in something, is all she said. So when I think about it, you know, say an atheist who doesn't believe in anything, I realize eventually they believe in nothing, they don't believe in anything, which is a belief. They say, oh no, I firmly believe that there's nothing to believe in. Well, then they have a belief, which is in unbelieving. So you have to have something to organize your thinking, or you go crazy. Then you have to put a needle in your arm, which brings us right back to that again. The whole issue of the drug epidemic in America is a direct result of loss of faith. And the only thing that could save America is a resurgence of a belief in God, and that God loves us and God loves America. Otherwise, this country is ruined. There's nothing else that can save us. Nothing. So when you go back to the beginning of the show and it's Obama suddenly discovering he's a Christian, all of a sudden, I never heard as much about Christianity as I heard today at the prayer breakfast. In the past, he never referred to it like this. Now it's Jesus is Lord and Savior. He was in the gutter and broke. The church fed him. It led to everything else. Now he believes in God all of a sudden. I'm glad to hear it. But why is Obama suddenly such a believer in Jesus and Christianity? Why? Well, let's do the math. It's February 2014, and in only a few months, it'll be November 2014. And guess what happens in November 14? Well, it's like homing pigeons. It's called election time. And just as homing pigeons eventually have to go home, even lying politicians have to find God before an election. That's as simple as that. Suddenly, Teddy, they find their roots and their faith. And you'll notice that as we get closer to the election period, more of them will be seen with Bibles than ever before. More will talk about faith than ever before, because the yokel out there, they need the yokel's vote. And there's no better way to get the yokel's vote, Teddy, than to walk around and start talking about God. And so you'll see, watch it. Do an analysis, a computer program, someone out there. How many times politicians mention God, faith, and religion and their Christianity between now and now? Or the most devout, pot-pushing atheist in Congress will suddenly talk about God between now and October, because they need the vote of the yokel. That's how they see it. That's all. 855-407-282. Jan heard me talk about Teddy and the Mandarin Orange. I can't believe it. Someone actually listens to the show and listens to what I say. Jan is calling from WILK, which I think is in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Jan, welcome to the program. Go ahead, make your statement.
I love you, Michael Savage. Listen, the reason he did the apple routine is animals have a soul. I mean, when they die, and when we die, we'll see them in heaven. They will be in heaven.
He picked up. See, I was telling people before, if you just tuned in, I was picking a few mandarin oranges off a tree yesterday in one of my yards, and I was putting them in my pockets because I didn't have a bag for them, and the lady who was with me was stuffing her apron and whatnot, and we turn around and we're traipsing back to the house, and there's little Teddy. He's got a little mandarin orange in his mouth walking behind us because he wanted to pick one too. It was such a touching moment. So you're saying it's because they have a little soul.
Others
would argue, okay, others would say, oh, come on, he's just a copycat, dogs mimic man. It doesn't matter. It was a cute moment to me. Do you know what John Steinbeck said about animals and what happens when we die? Did you hear that one?
Oh, well, I believe that we'll see our pets in heaven. Well,
John Steinbeck, who loved animals, he wrote Travels with Charlie, he said, he loved dogs. He said, here's how it works. When we die, we go to a place where the dogs and cats are our masters and we're their pets. And how we treated them is how they'll treat us. I loved it. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? How we treated them on this earth is how they're going to treat us in the next world. That's why I take extra good care of Teddy. It's not why. I just love this little animal. He's such a friend. I call him my little Well, let's not go into my relationship with my dog. You know, I love that book, Travels with Charlie, by John Steinbeck. Did you know that that great short story or novel, if you want to call it that, you know what Steinbeck wrote? He wrote so many great books. The Winter of Discontent, Cannery Row. His most famous was The Grapes of Wrath, of course. But he wrote Travels with Charlie, where he went around to find America with his dog in a camper that he put together. And I, in reading the book, I was pleased to learn that he learned the title, borrowed the title of Travels with Charlie from Robert Louis Stevenson's Travels with a Donkey from 1879. So even a great writer such as Steinbeck, a Nobel Prize winner and a great writer, borrowed from someone perhaps even greater than himself and, you know, adapted it to his own use. I didn't know that. I bet you didn't know that. It's nice to learn things on radio. I've been saving this statement for about 6 months. It just came up right now. See, I don't just throw it in. This book has been sitting on my desk for 6 months. I didn't have a place for it. I have it right here. Robert Louis Stevenson's Travels with a Donkey provided the title Travels with Charlie because both he and Elaine admired Stevenson. Anyway, it's an interesting book, an interesting topic right here on the Savage Nation. You should read Travels with Charlie. It's very interesting how he saw America at that time. Oh, I got too many underlines to even go through it. What time is it already? Oh, my God. It's that time again. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know, we're talking about the meaning of life when it comes down to it. I don't know what man, no matter how crude, doesn't think about it even once in a while. So one of the shows I like to watch on TV is a replay of The Sopranos. I never get tired of it. The show is so good. So last night I watched a replay of where, you remember there was a character, even if you don't watch it, of the guy with the ponytail. He was an enforcer that came in from Naples to work for the New Jersey mob. Tough kid. So later on in the show, you know, year later, his father dies. He goes home to Naples to his father's funeral. And it's a beautiful mausoleum, series of mausoleums on a hilltop in Naples on a sunny day. And they're all dressed in tuxedos, the mourning clothing. And his uncle, the father who died, his brother of the uncle, little white, played by a little white Italian actor. So he speaks to him in Italian. I don't know who wrote the dialogue for this show. So the guy's over there at his father's funeral. So the uncle looks at him, little guy, maybe 5'1", white hair, and he says to the enforcer who's come to his father's funeral, he says, "Don't take it too personally." He said, "Your father had a lot of women. That's all we can expect." I mean, one line like that, I wound up laughing last night. The dog looked at me like I was crazy. I mean, that's a one-liner. I mean, you want to reduce life to that? "Your father had a lot of women. That's all you can expect." One line like that. I mean, it's unbelievably cynical, but so funny, it's unbelievable. Anyway, that's why I like good art. I don't care where it comes from, how it arrives on my doorstep, if I get a laugh out of it. So, oh my God, Steinbeck Travels with Charlie. You talk about wanderlust. You should read it. Maybe I'll read it in the next hour, pieces of it, because it's all about how we look upon the next wave of immigrants and how we put them down. And how the next wave puts down the next one. And how and why we reject the foreigners. And why they resent us. The miner came in 49, the whores in 51. And when they got together, they made a native son.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. Live in hour number three. See, when I say live in hour number three, it means I'm alive. Therefore, I exist. I talk, therefore, I am. Think about that. I talk, therefore, I am. We're talking about existence today. If you analyze all of politics, what do you think it's really about? It's a fear that they're going to somehow take away some portion of your existence by giving it to others who don't deserve it. That's what politics boils down to, that. So today we've been talking about Obama suddenly discovering, I would say, in a, wrapping himself more than ever in his Christianity. I've never heard him get so religious. Or maybe he had a, you know, a Satori in the White House in between the visits by the rap stars. Maybe he was praying all along. In between the partying, maybe he really did find to embrace Jesus as his Lord and Savior in a new way. Why should I doubt him? It's between him and God. But at the National Prayer Breakfast, he didn't defend the Christian churches and the Christians who were being slaughtered and churches burned in Syria, Egypt, and Africa. Instead, he talked about himself again. He said it was about him again. It wasn't about the war on Christianity in America. It was about him again. Again about him at the National Prayer Breakfast. So that led us to talking about faith, and that led us to talking about atheism. That led us to talking about, can you believe in God and evolution at the same time? And I thought we had a wonderful couple of hours so far. And I wanted to continue because I ended up by talking about, someone said my dog, and he was carrying a mandarin orange in his little mouth yesterday as I picked him from a tree. As the rain started to come down, they drizzling, and how cute it was. And a woman said that, you know, they have a soul, animals. And I had said that Steinbeck wrote that in the next world, the dogs and cats, our pets, in other words, are the people, and we're their pets, and we're treated the way we treated them in the next world. So I reached over on my desk to a copy of a Steinbeck collection that I've had here for months, and in it I quoted Travels with Charlie. I've been meaning to talk about this for at least 9 months now. I realize I'm not cooking a steak outside in the snow right now, from the wall banger to the steak burner in one generation, but I'm sorry. I'm talking about Travels with Charlie because it's an amazing book by Steinbeck. I'm going to read you about immigration, how people looked upon it, then I'll take your calls. So he says, I find it difficult to write about my native place, Northern California. It should be the easiest because I knew that strip angled against the Pacific better than any place in the world. And then he talks about, but it's no longer what it was. And he's resenting, as he travels around America with his dog and travels with Charlie, he resents what's been done to Northern California and other parts of America. And he writes about this. And he says, isn't this a typical complaint? He said, I have never resisted change, even when it has been called progress. And yet I felt resentment toward the strangers swamping what I thought of as my country with noise and clutter and the inevitable rings of junk. And of course, these new people will resent the newer people. He said, I remember how when I was a child, we responded to the natural dislike of the stranger. We who were born here and our parents also felt a strange superiority over newcomers, barbarians, forestieri, and they, the foreigners, resented us and even made a rude poem about us. And he said, and we were an outrage to the Spanish Mexicans, and they in their turn on the Indians. Could that be why the sequoias make folks nervous? Those natives were grown trees when a political execution took place on Golgotha. They were well toward middle age when Caesar destroyed the Roman Republic in the process of saving it. To the sequoias, everyone is a stranger, a barbarian. I mean, the writing is astounding, isn't it? So then he goes on about the immigration, right, and trailer homes, and the trailer homes that were popping up in California. And he wrote, and they bring with them a new problem. These people partake of all the local facilities, the hospitals, the schools, police protection, welfare programs, and so far they do not pay taxes. Local facilities are supported by real estate taxes, from which the mobile home is immune. It is true that the state imposes a license fee, but that fee does not come to the counties or the towns except for road maintenance and extension. And so he's then talking about how those who pay taxes resent those who don't. And I thought it's quite applicable to the illegal immigrants who are sucking us dry here, partaking of the local facilities, the hospitals, the schools, police protection, welfare programs, you name it, and they pay no taxes. And I thought that segues very neatly into the entire issue of immigration today, because there was a breakthrough. Apparently, John Boehner, who has been attacked viciously, as he should have been, for wobbling and going over to the other side, came out today and definitively said, fundamentally, it's dead. No amnesty. It's over. Because the other side only wants amnesty or nothing. You look at Nancy Pelosi in between sucking on hard candies and gloating at everybody. I don't know how she does this. She, again, back to the basics. Not one iota of change. It's all or nothing. Either it's a full amnesty or no immigration reform to her. And with the smirk and with the candy and sucking and immigration and this, and they come here to work and it's the American way and we're all immigrants and they're wonderful and increase the taxes and we're going to get more taxes and they work hard and they're tough and on and on. No one says a word to them. The Schmendricks in the media. They sit there like morons, which is why they're reporters. So you just wonder, how do they get away with it? The answer is no one asks them a question. That's how. So here we are. Those are the issues of the day. And, of course, the God and evolution question is perhaps the juiciest of them all. I could use a sucking candy right now. By the way, I'm going to look for one right after the show. Let's go to WABC New York for the first caller of this hour. Father, a Roman Catholic priest, has something to tell you. Father, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Thanks very much. You had an Orthodox rabbi, now you have a Catholic priest who completely agrees with you that those two are not mutually opposed. And I think of this dialectic thinking, we have to think more evolved, like both and, not always either or. And I think that's what stops people from being, you know, they have to get into a camp and nothing else exists. And that's dangerous thinking and very, I think, very uninvolved thinking.
I agree with you. It's not either or, it's both and. I totally agree with you. You can believe in God and evolution.
Absolutely.
And, Father, in your church, do you get people asking these questions anymore? Do people still come in with these fundamental questions?
Not in our church. We pretty much everyone is would be an evolutionist. There would not be, you know, and they would still say God is behind it, but they wouldn't. They certainly don't think of a literal 7-day Bible kind of creationalism.
But isn't it interesting what that old tape that I played with that rabbi who said that the unit of time that we call a day could be a billion years to God. I thought that solved that riddle.
That's the thing. I think, you know, even as a priest, you know, I have a doctorate in theology, but I'll tell you, the more I studied, the less you really know about God. Like, you probe and you have images, but how do we really understand and explain God? It's like we get pretty arrogant when we think we can do that, you know, so we make it.
Well, I think that's the purpose of questioning until you eventually realize you're only a man. And you're not God, you're not an angel, and you can only know so much, and that's the end of it. We can only know so much. That's how I've come to the same conclusion. No one can be that smart that they know everything. You know, because then we'd be God. If we were perfect creatures, we'd be God or Obama.
I love your humor. I think that the thing that's great is that you have lines of questioning and conversation that you just don't hear on the radio. And, you know, it's real thinking, and thank God for your show and things like that. And the one thing I just wanted to add is that, you know, talked before about children born with leukemia and things like that. And, of course, over 33 years of being a priest, I've encountered too many things that are very hard to, you can't explain them. And the one thing, though, that I believe is that, you know, God is love. And in order for the world to make sense, it has to, I think God puts everything into motion. But if God controlled everything, then I don't know that love would exist. There would be no choice. Love is a choice. And I think God is there, and, like, he's a strength, and he's something that gets us through these things. And maybe we wish it was different, but that's just a whole different kind of reality.
Right. If you believe God controlled everything, and you then saw that he gave little babies leukemia, you'd have to say he's a bad God.
Absolutely. You couldn't even, but why would you want to believe in that?
Why would you want to believe in someone who does such, an entity that does such things? So, therefore, you have to come back in order to still be a man of faith. You say God is omnipresent, but God is not omnipotent. He doesn't control everything on the earth.
I sometimes
think he set everything in motion, and then the rest is almost now moving on its own mechanical motion right now. Now, that doesn't complete the discussion, though. I, in my own life, have seen God's intervention in my life when I've asked for it. That's what I want to say. I think that just talking about God and begging God and praying to God can bring God into your life, and you can actually move events in your life by doing that.
Well, I think so, too, because God, you know, again, I think too many people think of God as this old man sitting at a desk or in a throne, but if God is an energy, and we attach that energy by prayer or whatever way we bring God into our lives, there's definitely, I mean, I've seen people heal dramatically and all that, but Is that the norm?
That's right. That's right. That's right. Just doing the prayers brings... You see, but every religion on earth, every belief system on earth seeks to bring in that so-called heavenly energy down from wherever it may be or wherever it is around us into the body, into the spirit, into the soul. And that energy can be used in a myriad of ways, whether it be healing or fighting or loving or reading or thinking.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think we've had a beautiful moment here. I haven't done this in radio for so long. I have to do this now since we're into it. I don't mean to do this, but, you know, I have Orthodox Jewish friends I haven't seen in a while. I've wandered away from religion for a while. I gain my faith. I lose my faith. I'm like Mother Teresa. in that regard, she doubted an awful lot. But he gave me a book, a prayer book, the Orthodox Jewish prayer book. Now, put aside the stereotypes, because the minute you say it, you think of all of the corruption you've seen lately. And I know it's easy to get cynical about religious people, but not everyone is like that. Not everyone's like that in any religion. No one is ever like that. Not the stereotypes aside, look at the actual writing. So you look at the morning blessings of the religious Jew. Do you know what it tells them to do the minute they wake up in the morning? Immediately upon awakening, in order to be able to prevail over your evil inclination and rise quickly, a person should consider in whose presence he lies. And then they tell you to immediately pray to God upon waking up and then go wash your hands. And you wash your hands immediately because you may have touched yourself in the middle of the night. And it also sets you on the path of righteousness for the day. And the first thing you do, and the first blessing in the morning, you're not going to believe it, is, "Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us concerning the washing of the hands." So you say, now listen to what I just said to you. You say, like, oh, religious Jews, that's the first thing to do is wash their hands? And then what is the secular man? They make a mockery. Oh, he's a washer, hand washer. Have you ever heard that in movies? Or a statement, he's a hand washer. A hand washer. Well, hygienically, it's a smart thing to be in a dirty world of the kind we live in. So listen to the second one. You won't believe this. Now, this was written thousands of years ago. How did they know this? How did they know this? "Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has formed man in wisdom and created within him numerous orifices and cavities. It is revealed and known before the throne of your glory that if but one of them were to be blocked or one of them were to be opened, it would be impossible to exist even for a short while. Blessed are you, Lord, who heals all flesh and performs wonders." Thousands of years ago, they were talking about arteries, that if they were blocked, you couldn't exist for even a few minutes. So what does that say? Why would you make a prayer like that in the morning to God? Why? Because it humbles you. It makes you understand that each breath is a miracle. Every breath you take could be your, could be your last. No, you got to laugh at it all. So it makes you a very religious person, even if you don't want to be. You realize nothing is given. I don't know. I'm just telling you some of these thoughts that I have about these things, because I often think about this. I really do. Like the miracle of it all. And then it leads you to ask yourself, all right, so if God's given me life and God's given me long life and God's given me relatively good health, why? What does he want me to do with it? What does he want me to go to Hollywood and make a movie? That's the end line of it all? To become a bigger radio star, to write a bigger book? That's not why I'm here. I say to myself, there's more to it than that. I don't know what that more is, but it's certainly not to run for office. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation is presented by Swiss America at 800-BUY-COIN, the only gold company Michael Savage trusts.
I am live on the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the program. I want to go to michaelsavage.com. There's some articles you have to look at. Now, I'm not peddling the website. It's not going to change my lifestyle one way or the other. But there's some interesting articles that I haven't gotten to. Rabbis send Wrath of God letter to John Kerry. I read it in the last hour. Remember Brian Terry, the Border Patrol agent who was killed in a shootout with the cartel gangs on the Mexican border? Well, new court documents reveal the final moments of his life. Take a guess what he was firing back. They were firing AKs at him. Obama permitted him to fire beanbags at the violent drug gang. That's right. In the last moments of his life, he had beanbags to fire back with. Okay, owner of Jersey Strip Club and The Sopranos is a mob rat in real life. Just for fun. But not for fun, as some of the other articles. Some of the other articles are amazing. Car crashes involving marijuana have tripled. CBS News. Car crashes involving marijuana have tripled. You didn't know that. Because it's so benign. It's just, you know, it's an herb. According to a recent study, fatal car crashes involving pot use have tripled in the U.S. Currently, one of nine drivers involved in fatal crashes would test positive for marijuana, said Dr. Guhua Li, director of the Center for Injury Epidemiology and Prevention at Columbia, and co-author of the study, according to Health Day News. Six states that perform tox tests on drivers involved in fatal car accidents, data included over 23,500 drivers that died within 1 hour of a crash between 1999 and 2010. Alcohol contributed to about 40% of traffic fatalities throughout the decade, but drug driving accounted for more than 28% of traffic deaths in 2010, 16% more than it was in 1999. The researchers also found that marijuana was the main drug involved in the increase. Main drug. So if you're under the influence of marijuana, you're a driving suicide waiting to happen. And it's other people's lives that we're concerned about. Drugged driving. Fatal car crashes involving marijuana have tripled. Have a nice high. Give me 15 minutes, and I'll give you America right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282.
There's other stories. Some are serious, some are silly, some are rumors. You know, the Philip Seymour Hoffman death. No one cares. Most people don't know who he is. I liked him as an actor. But if you ask the average person under the age of whatever, they don't know who he is. They never heard of him. I don't know what the media is going crazy over. An actor, a Hollywood actor died of a heroin overdose? How shocking. How many movies was he in where he had a needle in his arm? I told you the movie he was in with a needle in his arm I liked the most, which was Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, one of the best great Sidney Lumet movie. The Woody Allen is dead. No one cares about that anymore. They expect it. What, Woody Allen a deviant? Excuse me? And? So that's over. No one wants to talk about that. That's like, there's no there. Woody Allen allegations aren't new. We'll look back at the history of claims. Okay. True or false, we're not interested in it. So we'll put that aside. A waste of the paper. I recycle my paper, by the way, in my printer. I'm so frugal, I can't help it. I actually turn the paper around. People say to me, are you kidding? Famous author, talk shows, recycles paper? Yes. Just like it's blank on the other side. Why can't you just use it? It comes out fine. I love it. I feel better. I feel like I've done something good for the environment. I get a little green award for that. Muslim arsonist of gay club was Obama State Department Arab cultural ambassador. Okay, can't comment on that. Then we go into the prescription drug abuse leads to increased use of heroin and the heroin epidemic in America. Now, we know that opium production in Afghanistan is breaking records. What is that about? Our troops have been in Afghanistan for 10 years and opium production is breaking records. Okay, let's leave that one alone. That's not a good one. No, sir. Now, this drug once relegated to the gutter. I mean, who used heroin in your... If you're an older guy, people who are junk... Disgusting, right? And then you knew it was snorted at Hollywood because every movie showed, great. But now it's popping up at high school parties because it's $3 to $10 a hit. Who's doing this to our children? Who's dumping heroin on our high school kids? And what happened to the war on drugs? What happened with that? By the way, I have never seen people more addicted to marijuana than those who call the show to defend its use. The minute you say a word about the actualities of marijuana, they call and they start screaming that I'm this and I'm that. They don't want to know it. They're in denial. Marijuana is a very toxic substance. It's the road to heroin. You start on marijuana, the next thing you know, you're snorting a little cocaine. The next thing you know, a little pill at a party. The next thing you know, why don't you have some heroin? Oh, I don't use needles. No, you don't have to use needles. Just sniff it. Oh, okay, I'll try that. The next thing you know, you've got a needle in your arm and you're dead in a doorway. To me, this isn't a moral issue. It really isn't even an ethical issue. It's a medical issue. And the dangers of pot, to me, should be looked at through the lens of what damage does it do to the lungs. All we hear about is it's benign all of a sudden. It's good for you. It's not good for you. It's a great brainwashing to open up the whole society to using drugs. That's all. Then there's the Pope thing, where the Pope is now saying unemployment can lead to sin and suicide. It dawned on me that the Pope is a religious figure. I finally realized he's not a politician. Why is he continuing to hawk this Christian Marxism? He's saying that unjust social conditions like unemployment can lead to sin, financial ruin, and even suicide. And so the Jesuit Pope has frequently railed about the excesses of capitalism. That's very popular today. All the biggest capitalists in Hollywood are railing against the excesses of capitalism. See if they'll take 1% less from the producers, the financial backers, and see if the agents will take 0.5% less. The biggest libs take more. It's unbelievable to me. His message for Lent issued Tuesday echoed these same concerns. And he said, Francis urged the faithful to deny themselves certain things to help and enrich others by our own poverty? Excuse me? Where do you think my taxes go to, Pope? See, isn't there supposed to be a separation of church and state? Isn't the church supposed to preach the morality of the Bible rather than cultural Marxism? When did this start in the church? We're doing the best we can on poverty, Mr. Pope. Our taxes are through the roof. We have social benefits we can't afford. We're taking care of the world's hungry as best we can. We are welcoming all the illegal aliens, even though we don't want them here. We're taking care of them in our hospitals and schools. What do you want from us? So the Pope, I think, should understand that as a religious figure, we would appreciate it if he got out of politics. Am I wrong on this? Is anyone out there who's a Christian find it odd and offensive that the Pope is hawking cultural Marxism or social Marxism while hardly ever talking about morality? I think it's the Pope's job is to talk about morality. Now, the Marxists, the liberals will say there's nothing more moral or ethical than to talk about poverty and unemployment, and the Pope is therefore a better man for doing so. That's how they work. And that's what destroyed liberal Jews. Many liberal Jews who are well-meaning and very nice people don't understand that the ethics are not the sole teachings of the fathers. There's another side to the teachings of the fathers called morality rather than just ethics. So, like there was even a whole school of ethics that many liberal Jews went into. They left the religion altogether, and they joined a school of ethics. They thought that you... I used to hear this from Upper East Side, libs. They would say, well, the religion is old-fashioned. The real interpretation of Judaism today is ethics. And that's why they become such preachy liberals. They want to tell you how to lead your life. So that's that problem. And that leads us to the next topic. By the way, you can call on any of these topics. I can't guarantee you'll get through at 855-407-282. But I really wanted to talk about the heroin epidemic and what's responsible for the spike in use of heroin amongst the middle class, especially our even high school students. They're snorting heroin at an epidemic level. Where's it? How is this happening? First of all, they've made it cheaper in order to make certain that the children can use it. That's number one. Secondly, there's a cultural amnesia about the war on drugs that has been... I would say the anesthesia has been put out by the government. They want to anesthetize the entire country, saying, you know what, hey, you know, legalize everything. Leave it up to the individual. Well, that's not freedom, my friends. That's slavery. It's that simple. Now, this was an interesting one. Macedonia adopts castration bill for pedophiles. I thought that would be an interesting topic, which is, should pedophiles be castrated? Your answer is, of course, yes. Will it happen here? Of course, no. Why? Well, let's ask how people become judges. Let's leave that one alone. Macedonia's parliament has adopted a bill imposing chemical castration on repeat offenders convicted of sexually abusing children. But the country's leading child protection group said the law is still too lenient. The Megjasi Child Protection League, which had campaigned for the procedure to impose on pedophiles, you know, I once was attacked for saying pedophile instead of pedophile. Then I said pedophile, and someone said it should be pedophile. I said in either case, they should be executed. Lawmakers voted Monday to make penalties harsher for convicted pedophiles, increasing the maximum sentence from 15 years to life imprisonment, and imposing chemical castration on second-time offenders. The procedure involves regular injections that decrease the production of testosterone. Now, that's an interesting treatment. Decrease testosterone production. The reason I track my attention is that there's so many ads now for testosterone for men. Like, you rub it on like a deodorant in the morning. What does that do to men? The thing is, I would never use it for a number of reasons. It's not a comic statement. First of all, the reason that men, as you age, the reason nature has your testosterone levels diminishing is because nature has wisdom, and you're not supposed to be as randy as you were at 15. And the reason your testosterone levels are not supposed to be artificially increased is pretty apparent to anyone in the animal kingdom. Anybody who works around animals knows it's the same effect on man. But aside from that, you're not supposed to be in heat till you're 90. See, that's an interesting thing, is that men think that to express their virility, they have to be in heat 24/7 until they die. We're the only species on Earth who believes that. Most animal species go into cycles of heat, and it's periodic. It's not constant. The male animal walking around, let's say in the savannah, the male lion, he could care less most of the year. He likes to laze around in the grass, knock off a gazelle, and take a snooze. Once in a while, the hormones get him. He goes after the female lioness, and that's the end of that story. But he doesn't do it 24/7, 365 days a year. There's another anomaly about the human species that I had to tell you about. I cannot believe they would put out a new ad touting immigration reform, calling it a Republican ad. The Republicrats have put out an ad touting immigration reform, meaning amnesty, and it's being funded by none other than the undershirt-wearing Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg is one of the lowest forms of humanity, in my opinion. The man makes a fortune, God bless him, and then instead of keeping his mouth shut, no amount of money is enough for Zuckerberg of Facebook. So he now works with the illegitimate to push amnesty so he can have cheaper labor. And then they mask it. They wrap the desire for more greed in a sugar coating of compassion for the worker. So I want to play for you So let's go down the proposals of the Republicrats for no amnesty. Let's see. Step one, secure the border. Haven't they done that already? Why must anything new be passed to secure the border since I, Michael Savage, and many others have been screaming about it for at least 20 years? What do you mean? If we pass the law, then they're going to secure the border? They could do that without a new law. I'm sure there'd be a million Americans who would volunteer their time to build that wall. Here's the best one. This is why I really ran this for you. Learn English. Now, are they going to create a new department of English police? Learn English. Now, I don't understand that one. Anyone who is here illegally undergoes a criminal background check. How will they check on 30 million people? Are they going to make them come to a police station and run their fingerprints? This is nonsense. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Again, the phone number is 855-400-7282. It is the Savage Nation. Do you know what this administration is doing to the demographics of America right in front of our eyes? Do you know why he's doing it? Do you know what his intent is? Do you know what the transformation is that he has in his mind? This topic has been discussed by me for 20 years. It doesn't mean that your heartfelt emotions on the issue are any less important. But I will tell you that I have finally understood what he means by transformation. I wrote about it in Trickle Down Tyranny. I wrote about it in Trickle Up Poverty. I wrote about it in Liberalism as a Mental Disorder. Which, you know, how many different ways do I have to say the same thing for how many years until you understand that it seems to me that we're fighting for our lives itself? Because I pity the children who are young in this country, because they're not going to live in an America like the America that we even have today. They're going to live in some third world cesspool if this keeps up. I'm sorry if those words offend you, but if you keep catering to the lowest common denominator from third world countries and you don't require anything of them to grant them the benefits of this great nation, the nation then goes in their direction, not in this direction. It's a straight-out statement. You can call it anything you want, but call it practical. Because the fact of the matter is people flee Mexico, Guatemala, and El Salvador to better themselves, not to worsen themselves. In other words, if they could have the same lives in Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, they'd stay there, right? But they don't stay there. They love America. Unfortunately, we don't require anything for admission. It's like letting them into the Super Bowl without charging them a ticket. Well, my grandfather paid for his ticket. He knew he wouldn't become very successful in this country in the few years that he lived here, till he died at 49 of a heart attack from working too hard. But he hoped maybe his son would do better. And his son, my father, did a little bit better until he died from overwork at a very early age. So then I was man-child in the promised land. And I ran like a gun to my head my whole life. I am very much like the mythical or stereotypical Asian, by the way, in terms of my character. I have to tell it to you straight up. I used to read about Chinese students who would come here, and if they didn't get straight A's at Harvard, many of them, you read about it? I was shocked. They would kill themselves because they disappointed their family and their ancestors. So most Americans would say, that's crazy. You know, they shouldn't do that. Well, let me tell you something. That's not too far from my upbringing. They didn't say, kill yourself if you didn't make it in America or you didn't do well. What they said was, you'd be a giant failure if you didn't. All I heard from the time I was a child was, you have all the opportunities I didn't have, and we expect you to do very well. And don't blame anybody if you don't. It'll only be your own laziness or stupidity. Those were the words that I was inculcated with, which is why I've been driven so far in life. It doesn't come out of the air. It didn't come from nothing. I see the disaster of liberalism. I see what catering to the weak and the poor and the lazy do to a society. I didn't say hurt the weak and the poor and the lazy, but I said don't twist the whole society upside down so that the weak, the poor, and the lazy are suddenly the role models. Well, here we come right into the end of hour number three on the Savage Nation today for Thursday, February 6, 2014. Let's see all the news headlines from michaelsavage.com, Borders, Language, Culture. Remember that Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, who was executed by a Mexican gang at the border? Well, guess what he was firing back in the middle of the firefight with a dangerous cartel gang? Obama made him fire back beanbags. Agents fired beanbags at violent drug gang. In the new court documents, the final moments of Brian Terry's life, he's allowed to fire beanbags while they're firing bullets from an AK-47. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. But it gets much worse. It gets much worse because what I'm about to tell you, only God can answer. Just yesterday, while you slept, the Obama administration, without any input from Congress, changed immigration law to allow immigrants into this country with limited terror contacts. Any refugee, any asylum seeker, who provided even limited material support to terrorists are now allowed into the U.S. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It was signed by Obama. It was signed by John Kerry. They are not permitted by law to change immigration law, but they did it. And why are they doing it? Why would they allow immigrants into this country who even have limited terror contacts in the U.S.? Where in the world do they have this power? They have no power to do so. But those who run the country changed the law to admit more Muslims with terror contacts into the United States of America. A Senate GOP aide said, "This end run around Congress underscores that immigration reform is doomed to failure." It's not doomed to failure. It should yield to impeachment. There are many other stories, but it gets worse by the minute. Now, you have to understand something. This is a lawlessness that is now metastasizing into every aspect of our political life. Well, here comes the train. Let's jump aboard, because tomorrow is another day. Now remember, every time you hear those train sounds on the train tracks, go and look at Michael Savage's semi-autobiography, Train Tracks, now available in paperback everywhere. Michael Savage saying, sayonara.
Savage.